Good morning, diners and travelers. You're listening to On the Menu with Ann and Peter Haig. And I know you've been sitting there with, as they say, bated breath. I never really understood what that meant, but maybe holding your breath to see when we'd finally bring you what we heard and listened to and recorded at the James Beard Foundation Annual Awards 2017 in Chicago. Well, here we are. We're going to take a pause from our Australia and 50 Best Restaurant coverage to bring you what we did. Peter and I roamed the events at the Beard Awards, and
we fought 1,001, actually more than 1,001 Chicagoans to get to the food and drink.
I didn't get enough food and drink at the reception.
Afterwards, it was really quite an evening. Those Chicagoans there. They call their city the city of big shoulders, and I know why. and they have a mayor with
That's a very good rabbit. Yeah. You never told me that one.
And they have a mayor with big shoulders, too, who succeeded in persuading Susan Ungaro and the board of the James Beard Foundation that Chicago is such a great place to have a food event that they're going to stay there until 2020. Manuel, or whatever his name is, he sure is a persuasive guy.
Yes.
So anyway, we
have some winners, some people that just have interesting thoughts. We're going to start here with some of the people that were inaugurated into.
I think you get inaugurated into kind of like a Hall of Fame, and the James Beard Foundation is called the
Who's who in American food.
And who's who of American food. We found three of the people newly admitted almost immediately and all together. So we decided we'd chat with them all at the same time. So here they are.
You know you've made it in the James Beard archives when you become a...
Who's who?
Yeah.
Yes.
So I have... Not one, not two, even three who's whoers. And I'm going to ask you each to introduce yourself, if you would, and talk a little bit about maybe why they said you should be in Who's Who.
My name is Evan Kleiman. I'm the host of an NPR show in Santa Monica called Good Food on KCRW. For me, the beauty of that show is I get to talk to basically everybody in this audience, everybody who's here, everybody who's won. For me, it's a continually energizing learning process, and the validation of the award for me is that it focuses more attention on a show that's produced locally rather than nationally. So that's really exciting for us.
But you also used to be a chef, and you wrote a few cookbooks along the way, too, right?
Yeah, that's true. I don't know. When I was looking in the audience and looking at people who were winning and just this whole evening, I was thinking how this is a business that's notoriously brutal. These days, sort of nobody focuses on that. Everybody focuses on the celebrity of it. And so to have this kind of validation from such an esteemed organization is really quite meaningful.
Evan's restaurant actually was way ahead of its time, because I grew up in Los Angeles too, and her restaurant was like the first place to do really fresh, Italian-inspired but local California food, pizzas, salads, and just like a really casual but welcoming environment. And so she wrote a book that kind of changed my life and a lot of, I think, my generation. Her book, Cucina Fresca, was a book that showed us all that food was not just fancy French food or fancy Italian food, that it could be fresh and local and bright. It told us how to make it. So
now that's Susan Goen from Los Angeles. Suzanne Goen,
yes.
With a restaurant called Luke's and several others, I understand, in Los Angeles. And I have this terrible feeling she's taller than I am as well.
She is.
Maybe you have a little bit of hope. Suzanne, tell us a little bit more about yourself.
So I'm a Los Angeles native, and I have three restaurants and a series of four cafes, a bakery, and a catering company all in L.A., nine food-related businesses. I opened my first restaurant 19 years ago, and I've published two cookbooks and sort of celebrate local food, connecting to the farmers, and just grilled and fresh, and what's sort of what's become LA has been a lot about now. So to me, winning this award just, I mean, to be on the list of people who've won it, that's to me, that's just so, it's sort of awe-inspiring and a little surreal, but pretty amazing.
You've had a lot to do with changing LA from being a food desert to being a food destination.
Well, I'd like to think I was part of it. I think Evan was part of it too. I mean, it's interesting now, you know, LA people used to, when I first started, I worked at Chez Panisse in Berkeley, and when I first started, people asked where I was from. I said Los Angeles. They would say, I'm sorry. So I think LA has come a really long way now that, you know, chefs from all over the country are moving to LA to open restaurants. We have so many young chefs opening, doing all kinds of eclectic things. There's sort of like no boundaries and no rules, which is a pretty amazing. I think it makes sense kind of in our, LA's such a new city, and it's young and it's vibrant, and I think that really reflects in the food team.
And it has a downtown now, which we never used to have, right?
Can I tell you, I grew up in LA, and for years, it was always like, downtown's getting renovated, the downtown's coming back, and to the point where finally nobody believed it anymore, and now it actually has seriously happened.
Congratulations to you, Suzanne, and congratulations to this lady whose name I've forgotten already.
Evan.
And now I have the guy who's really taller than I am. And not only that, in front of these witnesses, my wife is in love with this man, Michel Michon. Why do you think they recognize you now?
Well, yeah, I don't know. I'm standing on the stage with Suzanne Gowen, Evan Kleiman, Rajat Parr, Roger Berkowitz, and saying, who the hell am I? one of the things that I think is amazing about Who's Who is it reminds us that we're all part of a broader culinary and hospitality community. And there's so many amazing people in it who really give to the world just out of a genuine sense of wanting to share. So it's a validation that all of the hard work that we do together, all of the years, all of the grinding, all of the blood, sweat, and tears really is worth it, because we have an opportunity to kind of put our thumbprint on the world as we know it through food. So it's really terrific to be included in such a prestigious group of folks.
Now, what do you think about our good friend Massimo Bottura's reformatoriums?
I'm sorry, say again?
Our good friend Massimo Bottura has these places where he recycles leftover food, waste food, into really good meals, and they're called something like repertoriums.
Right. No, yeah. So I
know you knew about that.
No, of course. But to me, it's an incredibly important conversation that he and others have begun, because food is absolutely holy. And the way we produce food and what the earth and our soil has to do to give us fruiting plants, or grass for animals, or water for fish, for us to almost unintentionally be throwing away 40% of everything that's ever raised or harvested is unconscionable, when food is something that we all need, not only to live, because without food we perish, but to express ourselves, express our cultures. It's such a holy thing, and we've kind of taken it for granted. So I think it's a critically important conversation, and I applaud it, because the next frontier is figuring out how every single thing that ever grows on the end of a plant ends up on somebody's table for dinner tonight.
And you're proud. You're proud of this recognition tonight.
I'm very proud of this recognition. Always incredibly humbled, and still scratching my head as to why the hell they chose me.
Well, my wife's in love with you, so that's a good enough reason.
Oh, wow.
Why.
Okay. I'll take it. Thanks so much, Peter.
One of the challenges in being in the press room at the James Beard Foundation Awards is that it's so crowded. It's really hard to get to talk to everyone you'd like to get to, and you probably already noticed that the background noise is pretty loud too. But we caught a few people during the course of the evening, and one of them is one of Anne's favorite guys in the whole of the fine food business, and someone who respects her opinion a great deal, so he always has time to chat with her. So despite the fact that he was surrounded by others clamoring for an interview, we had the opportunity to have a few words with Chef Daniel Ballou, who has a particularly interesting insight about what it's like to come to America and be a restaurateur. So listen carefully to his story, as well as the adventure that he's about to embark on, which is yet another Daniel Ballou restaurant. So here he is on both subjects.
Daniel Ballou, you have a big project coming up. Could you just tell us where and how big and what is it?
It's not so big. It's not so big, but I think it's an important project. It's going to take almost 3 years to build the tower, and it's right on Vanderbilt and by Grand Central, right next to Grand Central. And I think it's a great opportunity to create a new unique restaurant in Manhattan. I think it will be certainly maybe the most modern and progressive restaurant I will have, and I think it'll be very interesting.
French?
Yeah, of course, but, you know, progressive French. So it's always with a lot of creativity, ingredient, of course, ingredient-driven, but there'll be also things that I don't do at Daniel or I don't do at Café Bouler, and something different, an opportunity to create something new, and I think it's a great opportunity.
Number of square foot?
Well, you know, it's smaller than Daniel. It's going to be 10.5 to 11,000 square foot. So once you put all the back of the house in it, you need 40%, maybe one or two private room, and then the bar and lounge. It's going to be about a 100-seat restaurant with a nice bar and maybe two private rooms. So it's going to be nice.
I'm so excited you're doing something new. It's been a while.
Yeah, and also in New York, I usually self-finance all my business. So this one, it's going to be a great opportunity of partnership also with the developer, and I think that's a great thing.
I miss seeing you. I'll see you soon.
I hope to see you at Danielle very soon.
Thank you.
Many of my restaurants. But I'm very proud today that our pastry chef, Gaia Oliveira, has won the best pastry chef in America. She has been nominated a couple of times, but she has been an amazing. We have been together for 16 years, and she has been an amazing. I mean, she has evolved and refined her work. And I think Daniel is one of the finest pastry today and the most creative. And I'm very happy that she got rewarded. And that goes back to my first pastry chef who won the James Beard Award was Jacques Torres when I was at Le Cirque. And then after, it was François Paillard at Daniel, the first Daniel. And then after, it was Dominique Ancel at Daniel. And now Gaia Oliveira at Daniel. So to have four of the finest pastry chefs in America to have worked with me, I'm very proud of that.
We missed you in Melbourne.
Yes, I did too. I wish I was there.
I wanted to ask him how he felt about the Paul Bocuse Award. I mean, that has to be really special.
Well, the chef is here, Matt Peters, is here.
But I just wanted to ask you how you felt about it.
It was the proudest moment.
Because you're from Lyon anyway, right?
I am from Lyon. I'm from the town of Paul Bocuse, but it's not about Paul Bocuse deciding who's going to win. It's about the 24 judges from 24 different countries. And as much as you think we could have an edge, it wasn't possible. And it took us 8 years to go on the podium and 10 years to win the gold. And I think that was a commitment we had with Thomas Keller, myself, and we did everything we could to support this American team. And now we have a great organization, Mentor, who not only is supporting the American team to Lyon, but is also giving grants to young chefs to be able to take a sabbatical, take 3 months and stage in some of the best restaurants in the world. And I think, to have gave already $1 million of grants in 3 years, to us, it's our proudest things. It's the most important things, because we are transforming the life of young kids by giving them the chance to stay very loyal to who they work for, but at the same time to have the opportunity to see outside what's happening also.
I think this is something we should say that a lot of people wouldn't even think about, which is the contribution you have made. You came here as an immigrant, as I did.
Yeah.
And now you're really giving back something very important.
Wow.
Does that make you feel good?
I had a dollar in my pocket, but at least I learned to cook before I came to America. So I came in my luggage. That was certainly maybe what was worth the most, my knowledge in cooking. And then I opened my first business. And I think today what we're doing for the next generation, what the commitment we have to be contributing in a very small but meaningful way for us, it's a lot. Because today, you know, the industry has grown so much and there's so much incredible young talent. But, you know, it's not easy to be a young cook. You never make too much money. And, you know, you want to be able to be loyal to who you work for, and yet you want to be able to see the world. And so if we can bridge the two, it's a win for us.
Well, as Americans, we embrace you, Danielle. We are
so
delighted you've been part of our country.
Wow.
And we wish you well. We know there's a new generation.
We feel like they're all our children. Those young chefs, and they give us a lot of pride. And so it don't matter, you know, there's young cooks who don't work in famous restaurants, but that give them access to be able to witness and see what it is, so they could decide for themselves the direction they want to take in their life. And I think that's very important.
Thank you so much, Danielle.
You're welcome. Thank you.
And don't go away, because we'll be right back after a short break.
Podcasting services for On the Menu Radio are provided by ASP Station, www.aspstation.net.
Next up, we're going to deal with
you're supposed to say welcome back.
Oh, welcome back. Next up,
next up.
Good buddies from Evroco, the design firm that just kind of puts everybody else in the dust. And we have never had a bad interview with these people. We've had so many interviews and so much fun talking to them. There's always a lot of thought, consideration, and mutual companionship, and fun, just fun.
By the way, they just happen to be four of the brightest people that we know.
Exactly.
So it's always a pleasure to talk to them. The interesting part about it is, even though we're considerably older than they are, they treat us with proper respect, and you know, we really get along. And I think it was 6 years in between awards. I don't think it'll be 6 years before the next one.
Right.
So here's the crew from Evroco, or is it Evroco?
Evroco.
We've known for probably 15 years that Evroco was the best restaurant designer in captivity.
Well, we thought so.
And they all thought so, and we interviewed them about that about 15 years ago. Well, we grabbed the whole group. They're probably together again for the first time since then. because they do have projects all over the place. But I'm going to pass the microphone. I'm going to have each of you introduce yourself. And then say whatever you'd like, because that's what we did before.
Yeah. So my name is Adam Farmery. I am the most gregarious, best looking, maybe the smartest of the group. Certainly the least talented. Certainly the least talented. But I'm hanging on.
No, I'm William Harris, another one of the partners, and we're just really thrilled and grateful to be here at the James Beard Awards for Single Thread. It's an incredible project with incredible partners, and we're just elated.
Christine O'Neill, I am the lady. I am the lady of the Evroco band, which gives me lots of joy to be the only lady amongst so many wonderful, talented, handsome men.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes.
Just tonight.
Fantastic.
And I am Greg Bradshaw, and I am very happy to be here with my partners since I live on the other coast now. And so it's been awesome to spend time and celebrate our award together.
I mean, we're having fun, but I really have some serious issues to discuss with you. I mean, among things like you've always been associated with a certain kind of specific design. And it's how many years later? You certainly must have reconsidered and redirected your philosophy of design. I want you to say to me, to our audience, like what your concerns with design are now.
Greg, you want to tackle that one?
I'm sure you can get a lot of fodder from all of us on this one. But yes, design evolves all the time. And we're always trying to find what is, what's new and trying to stay away from all those old things that we may have used to have done over time.
Who won?
I don't know who won, but man, they are happy over there, aren't they? Woo!
Who was it?
Oh, nice. So I'm going to puff, puff, pass.
I think that there's pretty much not a month or a week that goes by where at least the four of us are separately looking for any kind of inspiration that's actually outside of the design world. So there's not a lot of inspiration that comes from inside the design world. The majority of the inspiration comes from real world context, traveling, getting exposure to different cultures and aberrations and crazy moments that are not necessarily design related, but that inspire us. So it's not about trends. It's a lot more about looking for the crazy, momentary, visuals that inspire us that have to do with everything but design.
Yeah, and again, you know, design is always, or our design is always evolving as we are. So when people may have, as you mentioned, put us into a category of a certain look, that was a reflection of our concerns at the time and what we felt maybe was missing out in the world that we wanted to create, wanted to bring to the market and to our guests and clients. And so, whereas there's always a design brief, as we change and evolve, our interests change, our filters evolve, and it's a constant evolution and growth. So,
I think just adding along that, we won James Beard Award for the design of Public in 2003, and however many, 2004, 14 years on, it's quite an honor to win a design award again for a restaurant that has very little can feel similarity to what Public is, but has the same DNA about the care of craft, the care of how spaces are, the care of how people feel in spaces, and the power of ideas.
I'm going to sneak something in here because it always intrigued me from the very first time that we met, and it's a passion that my wife has about the business of which we're sort of peripheral, if you like, but we're observers of it, and Anne's always concerned about opportunities for women in the business of restaurants. And I was very struck the very first time that we all met that you had a very powerful spokesperson for the other side of the gender equation. And I've always wanted to ask you, what was it like? They're the only guys.
Yeah.
How did that feel as one of the not guys?
This one's very easy. Because I was fortunate enough to have business partners who, without a doubt, there hasn't been a second in the time that we have had this firm that they haven't supported or stepped aside or helped create any idea, any vision, any notion that I've had in 16 years. I don't know if that's the same for every woman in every culture or environment. I assume it's not. But I know for me, it's been incredibly warm, incredibly loving, and incredibly visionary. And so if I have a beautiful idea, I never even think whether these guys will be there with me, will support it, and will take every superpower they have to make it come to fruition alongside of whatever that vision is that I've had. So I'm hands down the luckiest lady in the world.
Listen, you guys, since you're closing Public, I loved our get-together sessions. Where are we going to meet next?
We're going to meet at Ghost Donkey. Come on.
Genuine.
Saxon and
Perot. All of the other joints. There's plenty of places to go to. Ghost Donkey, Genuine, Saxon and Perot. Plenty.
We would love to do another interview over a delicious Mezcal Negroni at Ghost Donkey on Bleecker Street. So we'll see you there. Let us know. And we'll roll out the red carpet and the red lights.
Yeah. And just as a quick little closer, thank you so much for being such good friends over the years. You guys are really true, gentle people of the planet, and we love being able to sit down and talk with you.
We forgot to mention the Avrico Group won their award for the...
Single Thread.
A restaurant called Single Thread in the 75-seat or less category.
Yes, and, you know, these people just, they're just amazing. And their brother, Adam's brother, Brad Formery, who's a world-famous chef, was not in the group, but we've had many a good conversation with him as well.
We have.
He's a spokesperson for New Zealand food produce, particularly Liam, I believe.
Right, he is. Okay, our next guest, you won't be able to see him. It's a shame, because this man was wearing a light blue suit covered in sparkles. What do they call those? What do they call those little things? The ones you stitch on.
Sequins.
I mean, he truly outdid everyone, male or female.
It's a black tie event, but this was into another realm altogether.
He was the pale blue version of black tie, and he had a very interesting role because he didn't win, at least this year. I think he must have been a past winner, but he got to introduce the Humanitarian of the Year Award, which is one of the most
coveted.
There you go. There's a fancy word. Coveted awards that's handed out. So here's a character called Art Smith who gave me a few minutes, although they kept on trying to pull him away from me to talk to somebody else. It was quite a hustle room, but we did get a chance to have a few words with Art, and he's quite an interesting fellow.
Art Smith. Sounds a little bit like the name of somebody who might own an NFL franchise, like Art Rooney, except that's not what he does. For some reason, he entered this crazy restaurant business. Art, welcome to On the Menu Radio. And did you actually win something tonight, or am I just, I'm just interviewing you because you're a great guy.
I presented the Humanitarian, the James Beard Humanitarian Award tonight. I won it back in 2008 for Common Threads, my not-for-profit to help teach kids healthy cooking.
Oh, that's a marvelous. I was actually getting you mixed up a little bit with someone who owned an NFL franchise, and he did something for professional athletes.
Well, that's okay. I fried chicken for many a professional athlete, and you know, I love feeding athletes. I'm telling you, you know, and I love the Pittsburgh Steelers. Go Steelers, you know.
good man. I'm glad we dug that in there. We're waiting to see what 2017-18 will bring us.
Yes.
With a difference in ownership, as we're all saddened by the loss of our great hero, Dan Rooney. In addition to having restaurants, I understand you have one rather well-known client.
You know, people know me for being Oprah Winfrey's chef for many, many years, and Miss Winfrey introduced me to a lot of amazing people. Probably the most amazing was President Nelson Mandela and the late Princess Diana and a lot of great people. What she taught me is that, you know, regardless of title, economics, we all wish just good food. And tonight, being able to present the James Beard Humanitarian Award to Denise Coretta, who has this amazing not-for-profit, where she has these pay-as-you-can cafes, which I think is truly amazing. To me, what I love about the restaurant business, I love feeding people. But what makes me sad is that I don't get to feed enough people, and I want to feed as many people as I can. And to be honest with you, I'd rather give it away than charge for it, and I've always been that way. And I think there's not a chef that doesn't wish to feed people.
No, I'm sure you're right. You know Michelle Michon, no doubt.
Yes, I love Michelle in wholesome ways. I mean, he's a really talented young man who I have known for a long time from his first show appearance on the Oprah Winfrey Show when he had just started this mission just to make his son, who has diabetes, healthy. And I commended him for that because as a believer that food is medicine, Dr. Dean Ornish, a very good friend of mine, has always believed that we can change illnesses by the foods that we eat. And I think it's important that we give as much of ourselves that we can and that to provide delicious, wholesome food, because the more we feed people, the more we take care of people, the less illness and diseases and stuff we have in this country. And most importantly, food is love, but it is peace. You feed them, and you make a lot of happy people.
Now, you also like to get dressed up.
I love to get dressed up.
Just give me 30 seconds. Explain this jacket.
Well, Manuel is a famous Nashville designer who's designed from Johnny Cash to Elvis Presley to Elton John, Lady Gaga. If you want to be bedazzled in style, there's no other person than Manuel in Nashville.
thank you so much
for talking
to us. They're dragging you away.
Thank you.
Podcasting services for On the Menu Radio are provided by ASP Station, www.aspstation.net.
Welcome back, I think we say.
that was a deep breath.
That was a deep breath. Well, you know, when you think of Best Chef South, you have to be thinking of considering just about everybody who works in New Orleans, and there are a number of people in the competition from that great food city. But I loved meeting Rebecca Wilcombe, who did win the award Best Chef South, for her role in Herb Scent, in New Orleans. And I'd never met her before, and she was just an absolute delight to talk to.
By the way, I don't know if you got a chance to, but I also got a chance to talk to her boss, the owner of Herb Sound.
Oh, yeah. I didn't see him, but I love him.
Donald Lincoln. He was absolutely thrilled. And equally as thrilled, by the way, and unfortunately, we didn't have the opportunity to talk to either one of these guys, but Alon Shire.
Who I also love.
From Shire.
We need to go back to New Orleans.
Yeah. His executive chef at Shire won Best New Chef.
Yeah.
Nothing shabby with Alon winning yet another award. I did talk to him about that. I said, you know, you really need to stop winning. You need to give somebody else a chance. And they were two of the more excited people at the whole event. But Rebecca was pretty pleased too.
Rebecca Wilcombe, yes.
Now it's Sandra.
Well, I've just made a new friend and a new favorite in the category of Chefs of the South, which is a category I'm very fond of. Rebecca Wilcombe from a restaurant I also love, Herb Scent, has just won Best Chef South, and I'm so thrilled for you, Rebecca.
Thank you. I'm also thrilled. It was wholly unexpected and overwhelming.
Give me a little sense of your background, because I didn't know.
Well, I've been at Herb Scent for 9 years. It's my ninth year. Before this, I worked in the Boston area, most notably at Oleana and Harvest. Yeah, I do too. I love Anna and the team there, and past teams there, and it's such a great place. And I learned a lot, and when I moved to New Orleans, fell in love with the city. Like I said, it's my ninth year, and now I'm, all in. And I couldn't have found a better place than Herb Scent and a better mentor than Donald Link.
Yeah, but we love Donald as well. And as I said, we've been longtime fans of your restaurant. When I was reading predictions about, because you were one of two Southern chefs that we were interested in New Orleans, and the other one we interviewed was Nina Compton. And Eater said that nobody first of all, the gender issue was a woman wouldn't win it, and a non-native New Orleans wouldn't win it, and here you're both. How do you explain that?
Well, I think Nina and I are very involved in the food world and the community in New Orleans. I think we both love that city with all of our hearts. I don't want to speak for her, but I think that, it's explained through love and community.
What, of course, what kind of food are you doing at Herbsat?
Well, it's my food is a little more Italian forward and Italian focused.
Oh, really?
Herbsat is a French bistro with Italian and Spanish influence. My mother's from Italy, so my family's over there, so I lean a little bit more heavily in that direction. But I think the main focus of what we're doing is using ingredients that is responsibly sourced and locally sourced and enhancing the community around us. I think it's bright, straightforward.
How do you like living in New Orleans? I find it so exciting, but only for like a few days, and then I need a break.
Well, there's always something to do. New Orleans is a very rich place. It gets its claws in you, and you can't. I don't think I could ever leave that city. I mean, there's so much culture and so much love there, and the celebration of life and everything in it. So, I love it.
What part of Italy is your family from?
My mother's from the Veneto. She's actually they're right on the border of the Veneto and Emilia Romagna, in the Po River Delta. She came over here, 35 years ago, and we try to go back as often as we can. My whole family, my mom's side's over there, my grandparents, my aunts, uncles, and cousins. I know, it's hard to, there's a lot going on.
What has been besides, what else could be as exciting as you're winning the Beard Award? But, what other things? Is this your first time at the awards?
It's not my first time at the awards. I've come, I think Donald's been nominated. This is fourth or fifth year. And I've come with him about three or four times. First time as a nominee. First time being nervous. Really, really nervous. I've always been excited for him, but this is a different feeling, for sure.
Well, we've been following all of our New Orleans friends, Alon Shias, Chef, got Rising Star. It's a wonderful place, and I'm so pleased to meet you. I can't wait to come to your restaurant.
Thank you so much. I can't wait to see you there. Herbsat's a special place, so we like to share it with people.
Yeah, I mean, it has to be very different from when I went when it was very French.
Yeah, for sure. At 17 years old, things evolve and change, and we're always, we're about consistency, but we're also about pushing every day, pushing harder and harder and harder. It's a special place that's ever evolving and always getting better.
I love meeting you, Rebecca. Thank you, and congratulations.
Thank you so much.
Oh, I don't know how to say it.
One of the most thrilling stories of the entire evening at the James Beard Awards was the victory of the Best Chef Southwest, Hugo Ortega, who hails from the Texas city of Houston. But his story began, at least as far as the United States was concerned, when he crossed illegally when he was age 16 years old. And it's absolutely amazing to think that now he has 5 restaurants.
Yeah, and he's really an inspiring guy.
An absolutely inspiring story. Even more remarkable than Daniel Ballou, who, if you don't remember, because you weren't listening closely earlier on, arrived in New York City with a dollar in his pocket. I don't think Hugo Ortega had that much.
Yeah.
But it just goes to show you the American dream is alive and well, and especially alive and well in the restaurant business. So he is a very excited Hugo Ortega.
Some people say Hugo. Some people say Hugo. Hugo Ortega told me, I got it right. It's Hugo Ortega, the winner of Best Chef Southwest at the James Beard Awards in Chicago. How does that feel, Hugo?
It feels amazing. It's an indescribable feeling. My journey started when I was 16 years old, and I crossed the border illegal, and then I never looked back, and here I am. I'm 52 now, and I, the owner and chef of four wonderful restaurants, one part owner in Oaxaca City. And what can I tell you? America is beautiful, and I live in the dream.
So you're a true American success story.
I can say now that I have won the James Beard Award that yes, I am. I am a success story.
I think you were a success before that, but this has to be the crowning glory, right? I mean, what in all your life experiences, where does this fit? Does it fit with the birth of your first child? Does it fit with the day you were married? Or is it in and of itself just so high it's different?
It fits an indescribable feeling. It's something new. I'm very happy to win this and represent world-class cuisine, which is my heritage, culinary speaking, and I just a co-worker with another 300 passionate cooks that nowadays is the number that our restaurants and company occupied.
Your native cuisine would be from Mexico?
Yes, it is. It's a Mexican cuisine.
But it's not the Mexican of Taco Bell or these other kinds of places. How is that different? How is fine Mexican cooking different?
We own that to the traditional women cooks or mujeres tradicionales mexicanas. My grandmother taught me how to milk the cow, how to make cheese, how to pick up the corn. I was a goat herder, and I lived in the mountains in Oaxaca for 6 years, and that was the foundation of my culinary heritage.
Now, did your family all come to the United States at the same time?
No, I came first back in the early 80s, and then following was my dad and mom, and eventually I was able to bring my sisters and brothers.
So what do you say to people who say you don't belong? What do you say to them?
I would say that America is beautiful, and I live in the dream.
It's funny because I'm an immigrant too. You probably don't know that, and the United States has been very good to me. It's been particularly good to you, and tonight has to be kind of really just up there, right?
I love America, and I love Mexico too, but don't get me wrong, I love America. America has given me so much, and it's an incredible to be part of this wonderful celebration that happens every year. Just because of cooking and because of my heritage, I get to know wonderful people like yourself, and that means a lot.
Now, you've actually been nominated several times before. Now, We've met several people over the years that have been nominated several times and never won. Did you think this year was something particularly that was going to happen that was going to be really good?
Well, several chefs here in the great Chicago City told me that they've been nominated six times, and one in particular who won Spiaggia, the chef owner told me, Hugo, you might be able to get it on the six times. I won it on the six times, so if it happens, you will win it this time, and you know what? It happens, so I'm very thankful.
Now, Who have you told so far? Have you told your wife? Have you told your parents? I mean, who knows this great news? Is it just you and I and the people in this room?
No, my wife came with me from Houston. My daughter Sophia, which she is going to college at Tulane University, is with me. My sister-in-law, my brother, which is a pastry chef of the restaurants, and his name is Ruben Ortega, and so they know that I have won.
Because they're here, they were here watching you win, right?
Yes, yes, they're here in the house.
Well, what a wonderful experience! Many congratulations again, and it's not too late for us to say to these United States, we're so glad you're here.
I deeply appreciate what you just mentioned from the bottom of my heart, and once again, thank you to the great city of Houston, and thank you so much to the United States of America for doing so wonderful, so many wonderful things for all humans. Thank you.
Well, another region that is just absolutely full of talent and the competition there is really intense is the Northwest and the Pacific Northwest. And the winners this year, well, they have their restaurant has a strong name. It's called Ox, O-X. And they have a strong reputation, and they had the first cookbook out. And here we have Gabriella Quinones and Greg Denton in Portland, from Portland,
yes,
Oregon.
She uses all three names.
That's what I just said, Gabriella Quinones and Greg Denton.
No, she uses Denton as well. You can't read.
Gabriella Quinones Denton and Greg Denton.
There we go. I don't think you were
understanding what I said.
You're reading my notes, which is
no. I'm telling you that if you do the first name and two names, and then the second name, and then you add the other name.
All right. I was just trying to be helpful.
Anyhow, so there we go. Best Chef Northwest.
Reminded me this had better be a quick interview because he's cooking outside someplace and he's
right outside in the hallway
and he's probably cooking beef because his restaurant's called Ox. So Greg, tell us about Ox.
Ox is a Argentine-inspired restaurant. We have a wood-fired grill, but we have a appreciation for the Northwest ingredients and seasons.
And Gabrielle, who's his partner in more than just the restaurant, tell us some more about this Ox thing.
I think he nailed it. It's we've got a big, beautiful wood-burning grill right there in the dining room. A lot of people compare us to a steakhouse. We serve a lot of very family-style dishes and. There's definitely the South American influence there. We encourage people to eat family style, and while we're known for a lot of the grilled meats that we serve, I would say that we are most proud of the vegetable dishes that we serve alongside those meats. While many people consider them to be, you know, the side dish, we actually have a huge following amongst vegetarian and vegan guests because you don't need to focus on a steak or a meat or a sausage to enjoy a meal at Ox. You can get a lot of great different dishes that are all vegetables. And
now, the Northwest is a tough category because Portland is such a great dining town. So is Seattle, and you've been up more than once. What do you think made the difference this time, Greg?
I think this time we had acquired enough. We've done a lot of. We opened a second restaurant. We got another book, or we put out a book, and we've also done a lot of national stuff. And so, the more food you get to more people, you get, you know, it's easier to. I don't even know. I'm a little lightheaded right now. So.
You know, I kept trying to get your book. Tell us what it was called. What was it called? And tell us about the cookbook.
The cookbook is called Around the Fire. It features a lot of the dishes that we serve at Ox Restaurant. And then some. We actually had a really good time
creating new dishes that were grill-focused, but then we also included a lot of the recipes from the restaurant that were, you know, some of those dishes that were guest favorites that, you know, might be a little more aspirational, a little bit more difficult, but then some of the simpler dishes as well, you know, and some of those vegetable dishes that I was talking about previously. So it's not all meat and fire. It's actually a very, I think, a very well-rounded cookbook that gives you a little bit of everything, and it gives you a definite taste of South America and the Pacific Northwest.
What is your connection to South American grilling?
My father's side of the family is from Quito, Ecuador, which is up in the Andean Highlands, and I spent my summers there as a child. And so I've spent a lot of time there, and that's just something that we do. If you have a Sunday free, the whole family gets together and grills simple and delicious food. So it's definitely something that that means a lot to me and is very close to my heart. And then, you know, Greg and I, as he mentioned earlier, you know, we kind of grew up culinarily or as chefs on...
Michael Solomon's
the
best chef.
Okay, well that's wonderful. He's a great chef, yeah. But let's go back to the subject at hand.
Yeah,
where is Ox restaurant in Portland?
Yeah, Ox is in the northeast side of Portland, Oregon, on Martin Luther King Boulevard, and so we're really. You know, we've just been there for 5 years, and we'd love to see you there.
Well, congratulations to both of you, Gabrielle.
Gabrielle Quinones-Denton. It was a pleasure meeting you, sir.
Just in case you're thinking that it was all work and no play for On the Menu in Chicago, we're going to slip in a little bit of work that wasn't such hard work after all. Last year, we were at a restaurant called 16, right on the Chicago River, and we enjoyed ourselves so much, and we discovered that the chef from there had left, so we said, well, we must go back and try it again and see if it's just as good. And this time we concentrated on the sweet side of the equation and had the opportunity to talk to executive pastry chef Evan Sheridan, who's a thinking man's pastry chef, and here's what he had to say.
We're going to be talking to executive chef, pastry chef, Evan Sheridan, who has been around. He's been cooking a long time, and several years ago you decided that you would specialize in sweets, pastry. Tell me what motivated you to pick that.
Specifically, pastry has a level of intricacy and also precision that I enjoy in the work environment. As well, though, I like to take my savory cooking experience into what I do in the kitchen every day, which I think frustrates the cooks sometimes because I tend to be off the cuff more than some pastry chefs are. But definitely there's that. There's also the mentorship aspect, you know, and for me as well, I have a family. I have three children, so having a job that I know is always going to be in demand and always available is very important to me. So being the best at what I do it drives me to try to excel every day, right? So that, you know, if in the future I can leave a legacy for my children, but then also represent the craft of what I do on a day-to-day basis.
Well, I heard recently that Dominique Ancel and his invention of the infamous, famous, whatever you want to call it, cronut, a cross between a croissant and a donut, changed the whole scene for pastry chefs. I'm not sure. He's not the first pastry chef that's made it big. Just give us some comments on this.
I'm thoroughly impressed with Chef Ancel's abilities. I believe he has the pedigree and of course the talent to be where he's at. It's well deserved. I know that some people have the feelings about a cronut that they do about a cupcake. It doesn't matter to me. It all requires a level of precision, and certainly at his level, I think he excels.
I was really asking, do you think that opportunities have increased now for pastry chefing as a result of this attention that he's gathered?
To be honest, what I hear more often is that pastry chefs are sort of a dying breed, and the art of pastry is a dying art. I disagree wholeheartedly. I believe it's more exciting time than ever with the crossbreeding of the savory kitchens and, of course, the pastry kitchens in the same. There's also many facilities teaching the art of pastry very well. Here in Chicago, we have the French Pastry School, which is where I graduated from. Chef Jackie Pfeiffer and Sebastian Canone run that school, and they're incredibly talented individuals. So I think that opportunities are increasing as restaurant and hotels are growing as well. Because there are more facilities in which to practice the art of pastry, there are more opportunities. That being said, I think more often there are less skilled pastry chefs on the market as well, because you see less of a demand for fine dining per se and more for casual restaurants. As I've always heard, the pendulum swings from one to the other, and so I think that we're actually going to see a renaissance of fine dining in the next 5 years, especially looking to New York and some of the great restaurants that have just opened there, and now, of course, in Chicago, where we have more Michelin stars in the city than we ever have. So I think overall, against most people's belief, there are a lot more opportunities out there.
So what are some of your specialties? We had the Baba Cafe with the bourbon-soaked, what was it? It was the Baba brioche with bananas soaked in what?
So that dessert has a combination of bourbon and Kahlua, roasted bananas, hazelnuts, and of course the brioche from the Baba. Yeah, it's sort of a take on, of course, a classic French dessert, the Baba au Rhum, a little bit more Americanized with the bourbon, and you have the bananas. So we have a bit of a tropical thing going on as well. I tend to do French style pastries with a consideration for the area that we're in, trying to use as many local ingredients as we possibly can. Of course, in pastry, it can be a little bit difficult because you're looking more at sort of fruits and things of that nature, and of course, different sugars and things. One of the things that draws my attention most is the sweetness or the complexity of a dessert. If it's not complex in nature as far as flavors are concerned, it means I need to work a little bit harder. And then also, a lot of my desserts tend to be a little bit less sweet. So to say that I have necessarily one signature, I wouldn't say that. It's more of a style.
I mean, how much attention, when we were here for the reception, you had liquid nitrogen in a station making snow cones with a Japanese, I don't know, some machine. And do you use all these kind of modernist techniques? And
only when applicable, if it makes sense in what we're trying to do. And I know that Chef Nick feels the same way. It's not necessarily our go-to to find a modern technique or even find necessarily the wow factor or the whiz-bang factor. We're looking more to impress with flavor and thoughtfulness. So if there's a modern technique, then we probably have a reason for using it rather than just going to it just for fun, if that makes sense.
What is one ingredient that you would choose above all others for desserts?
I would choose chocolate every day, mostly because of the complexity and the availability. When you start looking at smaller bean-to-bar producers here in the United States, I think there are a lot more that are doing a very good job of that. Even the larger manufacturers now you see going to more of a bean-to-bar style or bringing it back to the farmer or bringing it back to the origin of the cacao. That interests me quite a bit. I enjoy the process of not just cooking food, but what it takes to grow the food, what it takes to process the food, to get the food to where it needs to go. It's the entire process that keeps me engaged. So the more complicated, usually, the better. But chocolate, for sure, just because of the range and what's available. And certainly I work with it quite a bit as well. So
Well, we certainly enjoyed our dessert, and if you convinced me, you it was a major coup because I've no sweet tooth.
That's fantastic. I'm so glad to hear that. We're more than happy to have you here.
So there you have it. I hope you enjoyed it as much as we enjoyed recording it for you. And we'll be back in Chicago again, same time, same place next year. once again, following things, all things with food and drink label on them from On The Menu Radio for 14 years. Until next week,
bye-bye.
Same time, same place. Bye-bye.